This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Friday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. On today's Noon Business Hour, some significant analysis, also details on workers' rights in the age of coronavirus. If you don't feel comfortable going to work and your boss says you have to, what can you do? Right now, House members scrambling to get back to Capitol Hill today. One member threatening to hold up the huge $2 trillion stimulus bill. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi talking about it on the House floor right now. Let's get all the latest insight. Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economist at andrewbush.com. Andy, I guess a little tension here as it looks like this thing may not get passed as quickly as we thought it would.
Right. Yeah, I think everyone flashes back to the 2008 first vote on TARP, where they couldn't come to an agreement on it. But this is a little different, because if one member objects to the structure of how they're going to vote, then you have to bring everybody in. This is what we're hearing from the representative in Kentucky, Massey. And I'm not quite sure all the mechanics of it, but if it doesn't pass, I mean, this is a huge risk over the weekend of what we could see happen in the markets. They would deteriorate fairly rapidly. But I would just caution everybody, if that does occur, they will come back and vote on it again. It will eventually pass. But the big question everybody wants to know is, of course, is it enough?
And I guess, is it enough in the short term? But if this thing drags on for a while, it seems like once you get a $2 trillion bill, you're kind of limited in what you can do 1, 2, or 3 months down the line.
Yeah, you would think, but who knows? Congress likes to spend, and this time they've got a really good reason to do it. My view on this, and I put out some YouTube videos on it, but my view on this is that it's going to help. It's going to take a while to get there into people's pocketbooks, for sure. That's what they're trying to shorten right now. And the Treasury's doing a great job in figuring out ways to make this happen as quickly as possible. $2 trillion is a lot of money. There's one component of it that's very, very helpful for the functioning of the financial markets. And that's, I don't want to get too detailed on it, but there's $500 billion set aside for that. That's going to help. But there's a world of hurt coming, and there's a lot of people that have been laid off already in the restaurant, bar, hotel, leisure business, and more, you know, layoffs are coming, I feel. And I just, you know, I hope and pray that we can get through this and have it have the markets open up. Or, I'm sorry, have the economies of the four major states that are under pressure right now, and that's New York, Illinois, Washington, and California, be able to open up their economies soon, because it's really going to make a difference for millions of Americans.
And so that, I guess in that sense, we just really don't know how this is going to go. It's got to make it difficult for investors, because we're hoping that it's a matter of weeks, but who knows?
Yeah, I would caution anybody who thinks that. Even if they start talking about reopening up the economy state by state, it's up to the governors. I think what the president was talking about was taking a look at maybe what Florida's been doing and going on a county by county basis. That's interesting. And there's parts of this country that clearly no one's near what's going on in New York, right? So there's parts of the country that aren't feeling the same effects and are wondering why you would continue to shut down the economy and really hurt low to middle income workers as much as we have. That's the balance that has to get struck here. And it's a really difficult one for leaders to try to figure out how to handle it.
Appreciate the insight as always. Andrew Bush, an economist. You can find him online at andrewbush.com. Just ahead, the U.S. now leads the world in confirmed coronavirus cases. New York State is extending its school closures while countries across the globe deal with the surge in COVID-19 cases. The leader of one nation, now also a patient. Let's get all the latest. Michelle Cortez, health reporter at Bloomberg News in Minneapolis. Michelle, I want to follow up on something I was talking about with our previous guest. That is, you have areas like New York State where this is really hot. Then you have other areas where there doesn't really seem to be a lot going on. Are health officials talking at all about whether it makes sense to reopen things economically in these areas where it seems like at least so far things are okay? Or is that too dangerous?
Well, the health leaders aren't really so much talking about that. To a certain extent, some of them are talking about maybe we can relax a little bit until we need to kick in, with the concern being all this social distancing. It's really important that you do that at the right time, right? You can't have people doing it forever. But in general, I think everybody on the health side of things is still worried about the virus. It's not that you've somehow dodged being New York. It's just that you're not New York yet.
Yeah, that's important because New York, it seems like it is still growing there. So this could be kind of a precursor to what we see the rest of the country.
Exactly. And you can look beyond New York, right? Italy had their largest number of deaths overnight. Over 1,000 people died in Italy just last night. The U.S. has more cases. Italy has more cases as well, both than China. So we saw that once you really lock it down, as they did in China, they stopped the virus entirely. But Italy has been desperately trying to socially isolate and get it under control. But once it went wild, you know, that the horse started the barn. And so it's a warning for the United States. You need to get it before the disaster hits, but exactly when that hits, there's just no way to know.
So as far as New York goes, it is still a hot spot. Cases growing, deaths growing, and it sounds like they're starting to run out of space to be able to care for people.
It sounds like it's really desperate there. Yeah, we've been hearing a lot about doctors and nurses and respiratory technicians who are trying to treat people who, of course, can't have any visitors. So you have kids as young as 7. You have, 20 and 30 and 40-year-old people who want to call their children and say goodbye, want to call their parents, but they're on ventilators. They can't talk. The healthcare professionals can't help them. And they're still expecting the peak to not come for 3 more weeks. And that's what we're seeing now. So, I mean, it's going to be, you'll see it in waves. Right now we're seeing the cases, the ICUs are getting full. Pretty soon we're going to be seeing more cases, more demand on ICUs, and then the morgues are going to be getting full. It's just going to be a challenge.
Talk about the drug trial that's underway. You have patients in Norway and Spain trying to see if they can get a drug that fights this.
Yeah, well, there are so many things out there that doctors are hopeful about, but hope only gets you so far when it comes to science, and any of these medicines could actually make things worse. So they want to do some research. The biggest drug that's in development still, that's not currently available, is called remdesivir from Gilead. They are providing it to some people on a compassionate use basis, but it's not, your doctor can't prescribe it. It's not approved for anything yet. And there's been some early data that looked hopeful on that. The same thing is the hydroxychloroquine that President Trump has been talking about so much, the malaria drug. There was early results out of France. Not that the drug actually helped people recover better, but in laboratory tests, it showed that it got rid of the virus almost entirely in most patients. So they're hoping that will transmit to benefit to patients, and then some HIV drugs as well, and then a combination of them. And it's that way, when we do big trials with more than a handful of patients and we see how it works over time, that we're going to see how to go forward with it, what's going to help us the most. But it takes time to get that. And certainly for people who are in the hospital in New York now, it's going to be too late. So we're hoping to get these trials done for the next wave and the next wave and the next.
Appreciate all of the latest information. Michelle Cortez, health reporter at Bloomberg News. Just ahead, coronavirus and your job, what your boss can and cannot make you do.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The COVID-19 pandemic is raising important questions about worker rights. We welcome Paul Starkman, an employment attorney at Clark Hill here in Chicago. Paul, I'm just thinking if an employee is just scared to come in, they're afraid of getting the virus, they'd rather be at home, but the employer says they have to come in. Does the employee have any sort of rights there, or do they have to listen?
Well, the employee has the employee just has a generalized concern about becoming infected or exposed to the virus, and there's no extenuating circumstances, then the employee may be taking a risk with their job, and in that the absence may be unexcused.
Let's talk about, in that case, it'd be different if, say, there had been an outbreak in the office or something like that.
Absolutely. The employer needs to know what the circumstances are. The employer needs to communicate with the employee and make sure they understand what all the circumstances are, such as does the employee have some kind of disability that needs an accommodation? Is work from home feasible? Have other employees been exposed? Those are important considerations for an employer to know before making a decision as to whether to discipline somebody for not coming into work.
Got a lot of employees who had planned vacation right around spring break. In a situation like this, can an employer say, hey, sorry, we're canceling your vacation. You have to come to work?
Yeah, unfortunately, an employer can require them to cancel their vacation. There's no guarantees that you're entitled to take your vacation when you want to take your vacation. It does create a very difficult situation, both for the employee and for the employer, because it's creates a serious morale problem in all likelihood.
If there are, say, expenses, if you had flights or something like that, that you're not going to be able to get back, does the employer have to reimburse you for that? Is there any sort of requirement that they make good on anything you might be out for a canceled vacation?
Well, an employer can choose to reimburse those types of expenses, but there's no legal requirement in most states that the employer do so. However, it does create a difficult situation given the expenses that are involved in canceling a trip at the last moment.
Earlier, we asked you about making you come into work. What if you want to say, hey, I'm willing to work, but I want to work remotely? We know there are accommodations employers have to make, as you mentioned, because of disabilities. But what about if you say, no, I'll work. I just don't want to work in the office.
Well, you don't have a right to work from home, or telecommute, as we call it. So if work from home is not feasible or is not in line with the job duties that you're required to perform, then the employer does not have to let you work from home and can require you to come into work.
What if when you walk in the door, the employer has one of those temporal scanner thermometers for your forehead? Can they require you to check your temperature there?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, the answer would have been different, but now the general answer is that, yes, they can take your temperature. Unfortunately, though, it's not a really effective means of determining whether an employee has the virus or not. They may have the virus and have no fever, so taking temperatures is not, always advisable.
Good answers to questions that people are asking. Thank you so much, Paul Starkman. He's an employment attorney at Clark Hill here in Chicago. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Breaking news. The House has passed the $2 trillion stimulus bill, sending it to President Trump. The latest coming up in moments from CBS News. Illinois is dealing with its biggest one-day increase in coronavirus cases. Governor Pritzker questions the seriousness of the federal effort. There's call for consumers to stop hoarding toilet paper and food items. On Wall Street, the Dow is down 754 points, the NASDAQ is down 239, and the S&P is down 80 points. Oil today is down nearly 6%. It is back in the $21 range. Mix of clouds and sun in Chicagoland, but some heavy rain on the way overnight. Right now, 44 degrees.
CBS News Update. The House has just approved the $2 trillion rescue package for the coronavirus-battered U.S. economy, sending it to President Trump for his signature. His state hard hit by the coronavirus, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo announced he will not reopen schools.
We're going to close the schools for another 2 weeks, and then we'll reassess at that point, and that is statewide.
Surgeon General Jerome Adams hopes New York's virus cases will fall next week because of aggressive containment measures, but he says other areas won't be so lucky.
We also see hot spots like Detroit, like Chicago, like New Orleans, that will have a worse week next week than what they had this week.
Critics say he was slow to shut things down in Britain, and now Prime Minister Boris Johnson says he's tested positive for the virus.
I can continue, thanks to the wizardry of modern technology, to communicate with all my top team.
CBS News Update, I'm Pam Coulter.
A leader of the Illinois retail industry pleading with the public to stop hoarding staple items.
Tanya Trish Dawood, general counsel for the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, says the supply chains are good at grocery stores if people shop with their normal patterns. But if you buy everything at once, some others get nothing.
And I'll just give you an example of why that's important. So grocery stores are one of the biggest suppliers of food banks. And the food banks are hurting right now on two fronts. One, because we don't have the excess to supply them than we normally would.
The other reason, lots of people are out of work because of COVID-19 closures, so more people are going to food banks for help. Craig Delamore, News Radio, 105.9 FM.
The governor and other state leaders will provide an update on coronavirus at 2:30 this afternoon. The president and the national task force at 4 o'clock. That's 2:30 and 4 o'clock. And you will hear those here live on News Radio. If you're among the many now working from home, ask your smart speaker to play WBBM News Radio for all the latest developments.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Markets are falling. The Dow down 680, NASDAQ down 216, and the S&P down 69. That's a little better than earlier today, though. Let's get all the latest insight from Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at National Securities in New York. Art, before we ask you about the markets, I guess let's start off with this package that is now passed the House. There were some tense moments this morning where it looked like one Republican from Kentucky might hold up the vote, but apparently that didn't happen, and so it's now headed to the president.
Yeah, some crazy, archaic procedural things that we go through in parliamentary procedure in both the House and the Senate, and you know, more grandstanding than anything else, but able to sort of work our way through that. The House is able to vote on that. That's passed. So that firmly puts that third leg of the policy stool into place, which is quite important. So the policy response has been monetary policy, which has been early and often. We've seen a lot from the Fed, and they'll continue to be a backstop. And we had healthcare policy followed that pretty quickly, and we're trying to get tests out to as many states and locations that need them the most. And clearly now fiscal policy, which is hopefully going to be something that helps get us through the economic slowdown that's obviously going to follow in this pandemic. And we'll see how quickly they can get that aid out. The president clearly going to sign this immediately, and then they're going to work on getting checks to people that are out of work and loans to small and medium businesses. I think it's incredible psychologically, and I think it's incredible fundamentally, but it's also important to realize we've got more bad news in front of us before things get better.
Well, and is that why, obviously, the last few days on Wall Street have been up because they've known that this is coming. Now, though, that it's in the headed to the president, the markets are down. Is that because of what Wall Street is expecting over the next months?
Yeah, so the markets are clearly up unidirectionally over 3 days, about 18%. It's a pretty powerful surge. We haven't seen a move that large in about nine decades. So, you know, clearly a massive move. And I think that when we think about today's pullback, it makes sense. These are Fridays, during a pandemic. Fridays tend to be softer as you know, people want to exit positions that they've built up over the course of the week and go out flat in case news gets significantly worse. But I think the three things we have to wait for here is economic data, like the jobless claims we saw yesterday for the month of March and most of the second quarter are going to be negative. The number of new cases is going to explode. It's growing exponentially right now with a case count that is doubling every 3 days. That eventually will hit a peak. And at some point in time, we'll start to look over the other side of that and people start to get back to work. But that's in front of us now. We've got a ways to go. So I think the market remains in a pattern of volatility, but probably has found its lower end, but it's not going to find much more upside from where we are now. So look at the S&P 500 and think about 2,300 on the downside, 2,500 on the upside. Bounce around. That's a pretty volatile 200-point swing in the S&P 500, but I think that's where we are until we start getting closer to that peak of new case discovery.
Is that a warning maybe to the investors who saw the last few days and thought, okay, new bull market is starting. Let's start throwing money in there.
No, I think that, you know, it's interesting when we look at these things and we randomly pick 20% as the marker for a bull and a bear market. And, you know, what we have right now, it clearly is a bull market rally within a bear market that probably lasts for a period of time until the news starts to at least peak, the negative news starts to peak or the pace of negative news, the pace of increase decreases, right? So we start to see bad news slow down. And I think investors will start to feel more comfortable that the economy likely will be better in the second half than it was in the first half. and the market's a forward pricing mechanism, so we'll start to see investors come back in. Our advice had been, and continues to be, if you're a long-term investor, stick to your plan, rebalance to make sure you're in that ratio that you think you are. If you're a 60-40 investor, rebalance monthly and make sure that they, you know, that ratio of bonds to stocks is the same. Not to panic, talk to your financial advisor, and know that long-term investors tend to think about getting out and getting back in when the dust settles, and they never let us know when the dust is settling.
So what do you say to the person who has been watching that 401k and is a little concerned about what's been going on? I guess it depends on their time horizon.
Yeah, if you have a 401k, you are likely in the middle of your career, right? And if you, you know, and if you've got a long-term horizon, if you don't plan on retiring for 20 or 30 years, timing the market's the wrong thing to do. Now, you, some of the people that we've seen with the market down some 34% from its peak have been increasing the 401k bi-weekly increments that they put in, and then having more money taken out of the paycheck and front-loading it with prices down as much as they are. I don't think that's a bad situation. I certainly think that if you haven't converted from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA with markets down 30%, might be a time to do that, depending on your time horizon. And there are all sorts of things you can do if you talk to your financial advisor about how to navigate these times, but the one thing you shouldn't do is panic.
Good insight. Thank you so much for all of the analysis. That is Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at National Securities in New York. Just ahead, Entrepreneur Friday, key advice for startups during this trying time for businesses.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour. The coronavirus pandemic is highlighting the importance of business innovation. Joining us with tips on how startups can best navigate this challenging time, Luke Tannen, Executive Director of Chicago Innovation. Luke, I mean, I guess it would depend on the industry and what you're doing, but if someone was planning on getting something new going, say, in the next month or two, is it in general a good idea to maybe hold off on it?
Well, you know, it's tough. I mean, obviously, businesses are struggling right now. And really, the biggest challenge is cash flow. You know, where is it going to come from? And whether you're a startup or even a mid-sized company, but especially startups, you know, you need cash on hand right now to continue operating your business, paying employees, paying rent, keeping the lights on, et cetera. And the problem is that, you know, traditional reliable business models have been hurt. So if you are a startup, regardless of where you're at in that cycle, there are indeed some places to turn. There's all these new government loans. There's Mayor Lightfoot's $100 million Chicago Small Business Resiliency Loan Fund for small businesses in Chicago's diverse neighborhoods. You've got the state of Illinois just announced their COVID-19 relief fund, which is geared for nonprofits because nonprofits are certainly struggling too. But then you also have all these federal government loans, so SBA loans, and then the $2 trillion stimulus bill, which I just saw in the news, is going to Donald Trump's desk as we speak. And so new information is coming out daily, but indeed there will be support for small businesses and hard hit industries. But also don't forget about banks, you know, their understanding of the situation and offering flexible loans too.
Is this a time to maybe reinforce why innovation is so important? Is there going to be a lot of things now that are needed that weren't necessarily needed just a few weeks ago?
Yeah, without a doubt. So, you know, innovation is more important now than ever before. We are truly living in a do or die moment for businesses where companies need to rethink their existing business models and find new ways to deliver value to their customers. So I'll give you two examples. One is, you know, you look at restaurants, and today they've got a greater focus, if not an only focus, on drive-through and delivery as opposed to dine-in. But then another example, which I just love, is Dyson, you know, the company that makes vacuum cleaners and the like. They just designed and built a ventilator in 10 days. This was a brand new product for them, but it's in response to the huge customer need that's out there. So really, you know, it's all about problem solving. The best solutions come from talking to your customers to find out what their problems are. And that's really where you'll get the greatest innovations, is from your customers' new pain points that really today have popped up virtually overnight. So, you know, my advice would be stay close in touch with your customers. Their needs are evolving, and the companies that make it through this, they'll be the ones who evolve with them.
What about the fact you have so many people working from home? So many things are virtual now because they can be done online. Do companies and entrepreneurs who are thinking about serving them now have to shift to go, hey, how can I provide things online and maybe make it easier for businesses?
Yeah, without a doubt. Every business needs to focus on doing things virtually for the time being. And at some point, we'll go back to physical, but I imagine virtual will obviously be here to stay. you know, for us and what we recommend to other companies, Zoom video conferencing for keeping employees engaged is a fantastic tool. I'm on Zoom meetings every few hours, and it's just a great way to keep everyone connected to each other. You know, video conferencing for face-to-face with customers, doing more with social media to engage them. You know, at Chicago Innovation, we've pivoted to doing more of our own events virtually, webinars, instead of in person. There's no doubt we're living in a virtual world right now, and so every company must embrace and adopt technologies that allow them to really maintain a sense of business continuity.
We often talk about tension in the workplace between your baby boomers, your Gen Xers, your millennials, whatever the generation after the millennials is called now. Is this a time, though, for everyone to come together and say, hey, we have different knowledge sets here. We can help each other get new things started and really provide these benefits.
You know what? In times of crisis, different people shine. That's a great point that you've made. So I'm going to highlight a woman I work with. Her name is Allie, and she's become our resident Zoom expert. And so while I personally didn't know much about all the bells and whistles it offers, I now do. But it's because she was such a proponent and had such expertise with it. So really find out who on your team knows different things that really are relevant today. And make sure to capitalize on that.
Thanks so much. Always appreciate you being on the show. Luke Tannen, Executive Director of Chicago Innovation, a brand new book just released, Rising Together, the Story of Chicago's Innovation Ecosystem. That's now available on Amazon. Just ahead, virtual play dates help kids keep in touch with their friends without those germs.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
During this time of social distancing and closed classrooms, many parents are asking themselves, should my kids still have play dates? They should. How about virtually, though? Paul Hochman joins us, president of Humongous Media. Paul, with Zoom, FaceTime, other video conferencing features, it seems like something is pretty easy for parents.
It's incredibly easy. And I think what's really interesting is I have a couple of kids, 8 and 11 years old, and it's even easier for them. In other words, they have actually led me to discover some of the features available in the Zoom particular, you know, the Zoom version of this video conferencing technology, but it is absolutely happening in all sorts of levels. My 11-year-old literally goes to school, quote unquote, in his room at 8:30 a.m. And he's joined by his teacher and about 15 of his classmates in using, in this case, Zoom video communications, you know, there's that software. But yes, it's happening everywhere. Play dates, basically happy hours. People are comparing cocktail recipes. You know, that's not my kids, by the way, just for the record. but lots of people are using this technology now just to stay connected, to stay, you know, humanly connected as well as their business.
So, I mean, my kids are doing the same thing where they have their class virtually online, and I have young kids, so their teacher will read a story and all the kids will pay attention to it. And it does seem like, as best we can right now, a way to try to maintain that sense of community in the classroom.
Absolutely right. In fact, you know, a lot of folks and psychologists have weighed in on this because it's obviously it's having a psychological impact on all of us. And they have said that in many ways it does do a good job of replacing the sort of human need for that face, for the emotional connection. Obviously, I mean, we live in a fairly spread out area. Neighbors will swing by, but they stay, you know, 6 feet away or stand on the deck or something. And it's sort of strange for the kids to see their kids' faces. They actually, because the kids in particular are so familiar every day with video technology, everything from video games all the way to these technologies that we just discussed, they are actually more impacted in a positive way than we are in some ways, because to them, they equate that video communication with human communication. And by the way, one thing I'd mention is it's pretty interesting. It's even had an impact on the stock market. Zoom Video Communications, which has a ticker symbol of ZM, that's the video conferencing software you discussed, was confused by a lot of investors with a company called Zoom Technologies, ZOOM. That stock is up 240%. They had to find, the SEC had to halt trading because the company is not even working anymore. They're based in Beijing. But their stock has risen so much, but people were confusing it. So beware when you are investing in these companies, make sure you're getting the right ticker symbol.
When it comes to that, that's I don't want to say hilarious because that's probably the wrong phrase. Yeah. It is fascinating right. to see that has yep. gone on. When yep. it comes to the technology, talk about the simplicity of it, because you sort of touched on this. For the kids, they're used to the video technology. They're used to the tablets or whatever it is. But the parents, well, for them, they may be a little overwhelmed by it.
Well, you know what's really interesting is a lot of the parents have been introduced to these technologies, Google Hangouts, FaceTime, as you mentioned earlier, and Zoom and others, at work. And in many cases, we sort of get, weaned off of the idea that we're going to set up those meetings. Somebody else sends out an invitation, a link shows up, we just click on it, we don't think about it, it's on our inbox. Well, in many cases, the kids who really want to connect with their friends are initiating these calls themselves. In other words, they're acting as admins at a large company, and now they have real insight into how to set these things up. So in many cases, I focused on technology most of my life, and I fully accept also that I'm consulting my 11-year-old on how to set up a video conference. So yes, those features are in fact sometimes buried. The UI folks are doing their best to make it easy, but in many cases you can't find it. And I've now been introduced to gallery view, to how to mute a group, how to create subgroups. And when we had, in fact, to conclude, we had one of those late night cocktail hours, or about 8 o'clock, a bunch of the kids of the friends wanted to talk too. And we created a subgroup so they could yell and scream and jump and laugh. And we could also, as adults, have a conversation. Who told me how to do that? My 11-year-old. So anyway, don't discount it.
Thanks so much. Paul Hochman, always good to have you on the show. Paul is president of Humongous Media. You'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.